back against me. The cube I'd used. A vague recollection of the moment comes back to me now, splintered and blurry, the brilliant blue-white flash followed by suffocating darkness. It hadn't worked. I don't have a pathway into Zero's mind, not that I can see. But if I'm supposed to be completely under Zero's control, then I don't quite feel that either. Something about the hack colliding with Zero's mind must have altered my lenses, preventing me from being properly connected to him. That's what Jax must be doing right now, preparing new lenses to give me, replacing mine, and finally, properly connecting me to Zero and the algorithm so that he can have full control. I struggle against my bonds, but they're strapped so tightly that I can't do anything more than wriggle my arms and legs by a fraction. I have to get out of here. Zero pauses on the other side of the room beside a second raised gurney, to which someone else is tied tightly. I pause in my struggles at the sight of him. It's Hideo. He looks drugged and barely conscious, his head leaning against his headrest, and a light sheen of sweat gleams on his face. It's a sharp contrast to the last moment when we'd stood together. When he'd lifted his hand, his eyes black with fury, and willed Taylor to die. After all this time, no matter what the situation or his mood, I've only seen Hideo in control. In his office, in the arena, in his home. Even in despair, with his heart torn open, he never looked the way he does now. Helpless. His creation wrenched out of his control. In spite of everything I've seen him do, I can't help but feel afraid now that he's no longer running the Neuralink and the algorithm. It means that someone much, much worse is now in command. Zero stands in front of the gurney. If he feels anything at the sight of his brother, he doesn't show it, as he lifts a steel hand and grips Hideo's chin. I suck in my breath sharply. I'd thought Zero was walking around in here as a virtual simulation, but no. He's in the armored suit that I'd seen him testing with Taylor on the night that Tremaine had been shot. The robot that had moved its arm in sync with Zero's. Zero's mind is operating from within a real metal suit, an artificial being that seems alive in every technical sense. He forces Hideo to turn his face up to meet his, one brother versus another. Zero studies him curiously, like a specimen, before he releases Hideo again. He folds his hands behind his back and flexes his steel fingers in a smooth wave, stalking a slow circle around his bound brother. I clench my teeth, the white-hot heat of anger rising in me in a wave. Leave him alone, I growl. Zero pauses to look at me. You still care deeply for him, he says quietly. You think? I snap. Tell me, Amika, what's that like? Now he sounds fascinated. He's done terrible things, and yet I can still sense your connection to him. I realize with a start that it's because Sasuke was never old enough to understand what love really means. Not even the early innocent feelings he had for Jax could possibly compare to how complicated love actually is. He'd lost his humanity before he was ever able to experience that. My anger wavers as my heart breaks for him. Whatever it was that you did, Amika, Zero says, addressing me as he turns back to Hideo. It seems you affected the lenses of those you've linked with before, too. And that means his. He finishes a full circle around Hideo and leans close to him. But don't worry. We'll fix that easily enough. His words, mockingly soothing, bear an echo of Taylor's thought process. Even though she's dead, her Her influence over him must have been so complete and so extreme that it still lingers underneath those smooth plates of steel. But first, Zero continues, finally turning away from Hideo and heading back toward me. Every muscle in me tenses as he approaches. Let's fix you. I glare at him, wishing I could see some sign of Sasuke trapped inside. But the only thing staring back at me through his opaque mask is my own reflection. By the sink, Jax has ripped open the box with the lenses and pulled out a set. I glance at her again. She still has that blankness on her face, going about her motions like she's not entirely here. Then, her eyes flicker to me. I realize that Zero doesn't know I've linked with her before. Her flint gray irises gleam under the fluorescent light. In that instant, I see her familiar wit, her mind alert behind a carefully controlled expression. She's not under Zero's influence. No, but merely pretending to be. She shakes her head once at me, then her eyes look toward the door. A red light illuminates it from above, suggesting that it's locked. But beside the door is the emergency box I remember from the first night I'd been in the Institute. I look back at Jax, who goes back to preparing my new lenses at a counter closer to the door. Hope cuts through my dread. Maybe Jax is still my ally after all. If I can stall for more time, maybe she can help us get out of here before Zero forces the new lenses on me. You can't be real, I manage to choke out as I stare up at him. I don't believe you. You're nothing but a simulation. Then see for yourself. Zero reaches over and presses a flat button near the top of my gurney. The metal cuff restraining my left wrist snaps open with a clang, freeing my hand. I pull it immediately out of the binding, flexing my wrist in relief. My eyes return to him. Hesitantly, I reach out toward him. He doesn't move. My hand touches his upper arm. I almost flinch. Cold, hard metal. There's nothing human about the steel plate my fingers brush against, nothing that suggests a soul might exist inside. And yet, here he is, moving and functional, alive in every technical sense. Can you feel that? I find myself asking. I'm aware that you're touching me, he replies. I can feel it, logically, if you can call it that. Can you sense pain? No. I don't understand my limbs in the same way you do. Do you remember what that was like? Yes. I remember everything. Except what matters. Except what doesn't matter, he corrects me. I withdraw my hand and let my arm drop back to my side. Zero closes his fingers around my wrist. He pushes it into place against the metal cuff, ignoring my pleading eyes as he snaps it shut again. I don't understand, I whisper. Why do you want this? He smiles in amusement, as if someone like him could still understand such a human emotion. You already know. It's the same answer that Taylor would have given you, that Hideo himself probably once gave you. But they had goals because they're human, flesh and blood. Taylor wanted control because she's afraid without it. Hideo did it out of love for you. I lean forward, straining against my bonds, and grit my teeth at him. What do you get out of controlling others, besides the satisfaction of doing so? Freedom, of course, he replies. Now I can do anything. Enter anyone's mind. He nods out toward the dark hall at the world beyond these walls. I can be everywhere at once, and nowhere at all. And just like that, I understand. It's the exact opposite of what Sasuke had endured at Taylor's hands. When he'd been human, he had been her prisoner, trapped within the confines of this institute for years and subjected to unspeakable horrors, until he'd finally died and had his mind tethered to hers. He'd been fully at her beck and call. In seizing control of everything, Zero is taking back his freedom and more. It's his revenge against Taylor for all that she had stolen from him. Taylor's death. But there's more to it than that, I go on. You set Hideo up to kill Taylor, didn't you? You made sure she was with us because you knew how Hideo would react to seeing her. You wanted to bring his creation crashing down around him, and you wanted to see Taylor realize the moment she'd lost in her own game. My voice turns more desperate now, angrier as I make the connections. You wanted her dead, and you wanted Hideo to do it. Zero is silent. Something about my words has plucked a string in him. I barrel on before he can continue. You wanted to show him how flawed his plan was from the start. My heart trembles as I talk. You wanted Hideo to realize how he had corrupted the Neuralink with his algorithm, and the only way you could show him that, the only way to get through to the brother you love, was to force him to demonstrate it in front of the entire world. I take a deep breath. And that's because Sasuke wanted you to do it. Because he's still there, somewhere inside you. I don't know how much of my words reach Zero. Maybe he doesn't care at all. He's nothing more than a web of algorithms controlling a machine after all, and whatever is still human about him has simply been translated into code. But Zero tenses at Sasuke's name. In that moment, I know. Everything Jax and I had assumed is true. Sasuke is still in there. He had, in his own way, tried to stop his brother from destroying himself. You're not entirely gone, I whisper. You like to solve things, don't you? Zero says. Every locked door has a key, I reply. Zero turns slightly, as if he'd studied the tattooed words running along my bared clavicle. Behind him, Jax has turned to face us, the new lenses in her hands, and ready to be put on my eyes. I don't dare look directly at her. When is she going to make her move? Zero leans toward me, his presence overpowering. We're not so different, Amika. Your desire to control and solve is the same as mine. There's nothing you'd like more than to be able to control your world. All the terrible things that have happened to you have been things you couldn't do anything about. Your father's death. Your time at the foster home. Hideo's betrayal of your trust. Zero makes a casual gesture in the air, and suddenly, he conjures a virtual image of my father standing in the room. His familiar smile on his gentle face, his silhouette against the door, outlined in light. He reaches over to pin a bit of cloth on a bustier. I can hear him humming. The sight threads through me with the precise pain of a needle. Dad glances at me and grins, and all the air rushes from my lungs. Some illogical part of me reaches out, desperate to touch him. That's him. He's real. No, he's not. Zero is rendering him here, right in front of me, showing me what life could be like if Dad were still here. He's showing me the inside of the Neuralink, linked directly with his mind. How he will soon be able to control everything I see. Everything in the virtual world, for everyone. Wouldn't you rather have saved your father into a pure data form to make him live forever? Zero presses. It's a genuine question without a hint of malice in it. Wouldn't you like to see him walking around in your life, just as I walk around in yours? Is this half-life so bad? I don't dare admit out loud that he's right, that his words tempt me more than I can say. Is it so bad? I imagine Zero as Sasuke, a little boy who could live out the ghost version of his life, grow up and go to school, play games with his brother and laugh with his friends, fall in love. If Zero wanted, he could make this reality for himself now, creating a virtual version of this life for himself. He could live out a million different lives. I tear my eyes away from the sight of my father. Tears blur my vision. Zero's manipulating me. If he gets the new lenses on me, he can trap me in this false reality and make me believe anything. Go to hell, I whisper with a snarl. Zero finally, mercifully, leans away from me. He nods once at Jax, who has the new lenses ready for me. Put her under, he says. I don't have time to deal with her struggling. Jax meets my eyes. For a moment, I think she'll do exactly as Zero says. Then, her hand darts to the gun at her belt. In one move, she whips it out, points it at the door, and shoots with barely a glance. The bullet hits the emergency sensor. Every light in the building shuts off in unison. The room plunges into blackness, then is washed in crimson red as emergency lights flare on. The door clicks open at the same time an alarm begins to wail overhead. Jax swings her gun toward the button on my gurney, right next to my head, and fires. Another perfect hit. My metal cuffs snap open. I almost collapse to the floor. She points toward Hideo's gurney, firing again. He's freed, crumpling to his hands and knees. In the scarlet glow, Zero's silhouette is an ominous black hole. Even though he's embedded in a machine, I can sense the surprise coming from him. Adrenaline born from terror surges through me. I scramble to my feet and sprint toward Hideo. Zero's head snaps to Jax. You're with them, he says, his voice low and deadly. Jax doesn't answer. She just faces him with her steady look and raises her gun again. No, she replies. I'm with you. Then she shoots him. Chapter 28. Zero's reflexes are inhumanly fast. His body snaps sideways. Jax's shot misses his neck and instead hits him in the shoulder with the scream of metal tearing through metal. Jax fires again, but Zero lunges for her at the same time. Her second shot strikes his leg, sending up another shower of sparks. His leg twists oddly, throwing off the grace of his movements. I reach Hideo. He's struggling to his feet, but his motions are slower as he fights against whatever drug is coursing through his system. I pull his arm over my shoulders and force him upright. We make a run for the door. Zero turns to stop us, but Jax's hits have broken parts of the suit, making him limp. Still, he's terrifyingly fast. As we reach the door, Zero's metal fingers close around a fistful of my shirt. Jax is on him in an instant. Under the red lights, her eyes have the savage glint of a killer. She strikes his wrist as hard as she can. She can't break the metal, but it is enough to loosen his grip and for me to slide through. This way, she gasps out over the alarm as she shoves the door open and darts out into the hall. Hideo and I rush after her. Behind us, Zero's suit twists in our direction. The halls are washed in bloody light. Around the bend comes the pounding of footsteps, growing louder and louder. Jax glances at me. Everyone in this building is under his control, she whispers. Get out of the Institute. Don't go through the front. There are guards swarming around there. Do you remember the way to the side entrance? I retrace the path I'd taken through the building on my first night here, then nod. Beside me, Hideo is regaining some of his strength, but he still leans heavily against me. We're not going to be able to move very quickly. Good, she continues. Get out, then find a way into Zero's mind. When... She cuts off. Her stare darts over my shoulder, and I turn to see Zero's dark silhouette behind us. He flattens one metal hand against the wall. Overhead, all the speakers installed in the ceilings buzz with static, followed by his deep voice.
You're wasting your time.
Every scarlet light in the building goes out, plunging us into total darkness. I can't see anything, not even my hands in front of me or Hideo at my side. It's as if we'd been swallowed by a void. At the same time, a round of clicks come from the building's doors, the unmistakable sound of locks being activated.
I can be everywhere, Zero had said,
and now his mind is operating the Institute's security system, trapping us in. From the speakers, Zero's voice envelops us in this impenetrable darkness.
Why are you doing this?
He asks. His question is for Jax. Jax doesn't answer, but I feel her fingers close around my arm and pull me forward. The panic room, she tells me. It's the only place in this building not hooked up to the digital system. Get to the end of this hall and take the first set of stairs. Keep going up until you can't anymore. When you reach the last floor, you'll see two doors at the end of that hall. To their left is a third embedded flat against the wall. You'll have to open it manually. Lock yourselves in. The panic room. Tremaine had tried in vain to reach that room before he'd been caught. I can hear in her voice that Jax isn't coming with us. But you...
Just do it. I'm going to hold him off.
There's no sound of worry in her words, no sense of fear. She sounds exactly as she did the very first day I met her, cold and confident. I want to scream at her to come with us, but instead, I feel Hideo's weight leaning heavier against me as she steps away from us. Over her shoulder, she calls at us. Why are you still here? I utter a curse under my breath and do as she says, turning on my grid system. Instantly, the halls around me glow with a system of lines, showing me a layout of the hall, as if a dim light were still shining in here. But it's not quite right. Usually when I use a virtual grid, it can overlay anything, guiding a user through fog or rain or snow. But in here, Zero must have tampered with what the Neuralink is able to read about the Institute. Because my grid vanishes into misty patches, its data incomplete. The building probably has all sorts of virtual barriers in place, transforming the halls into illusions. At least, I can also see an outline of Hideo beside me. Jax has her back turned to us, her figure blanketed in green lines, and she's facing Zero, a completely dark silhouette looming in the middle of the hall behind us. Move. Hideo and I start staggering away. Somewhere in the halls around us pound the footsteps of approaching guards caught under Zero's spell. If they reach us, we're not going to have Jax's help fending them off. Behind us comes Jax's voice as she confronts Zero. Remember when you couldn't leave me behind? She calls out.
Get out of my way, Jax.
I hear the metallic thud of his suit's footsteps and dare to glance backward. Jax hoists both her guns, spins them in unison, and crouches down against one side of the hall, ready for Zero to attack. Her pose reminds me of when she had appeared beside me, on feet so light she seemed ready to fly. It's my turn now, she replies. And one way or another, this time, we're going to leave this place together.
Hideo's weight lifts from my shoulders as he summons the strength to move on his own. His hand finds mine, and in the dark, I take it, squeezing it as tightly as I can. We force ourselves to keep going. Ahead, the hall is starting to shroud with virtual mist, making it difficult for me to see the grids of the hallway. I slow, sliding my hand against the wall. Through the fog dart glimpses of shadows, figures shuffling left and right, others looking like they're running toward us. Sweat beads on my forehead. "They're not real," Hideo whispers, his eyes fixed on them in the dark. The grid's not outlining over them in green. Sure enough, one of the shadows dissipates into smoke the instant it reaches us. "Not real." I shut my eyes and keep creeping forward. The steps we've taken scroll through my mind in a list of numbers. Are we ever going to reach the stairwell? Maybe we're not even going in the right direction. Then, my hand hits the groove of a door. I freeze, running my fingers along the metal bar spanning the door's width. I shove myself against it. We burst into the stairwell, where the grid in my view abruptly reappears in crystal clear lines, highlighting the steps that wind up. In the hall we'd just left behind come the pops of gunshots. Jax. I force myself to move as Hideo seizes the banister and leaps up the stairs. His movements still seem exhausted, but at least he's able to keep pace with me. We go up, up, up until we've sprinted three flights and the stairs end. I throw open the stairwell door and stumble into a new hall. The first thing I see is a pair of figures hurtling toward us. My eyes go straight to the green grids overlaid on their figures. They're real. Guards. The thought hits me just in time. I drop to a crouch and roll to the other side of the hall, swinging my leg out and catching one of them right at the ankles. He loses his balance and falls forward with a grunt. The second guard twists around and points a weapon in my direction. I duck, bracing myself. But an instant later, he goes flying as Hideo tackles him, ramming him against the wall. The guard throws a fist at Hideo's face, but Hideo is too quick. He dodges, twists the man's arm around his back, and shoves hard. A sickening crunch, followed by a shriek of pain. The guard drops his weapon with a clatter. Hideo swipes it up, tucking it at his belt, and rushes to me as I scramble to my feet. Already, the sound of more guards behind us is approaching fast. The panic room should be at the end of this hall. We sprint down the gridded corridor. Ahead, it fades again into thick, virtual mist. But there's no time to stop and think about it now. We hurtle into the blind spot. "Almost there," I gasp out. But when I look to my side, Hideo's green figure has also vanished from sight, swallowed in the fog. I keep my hand running along the wall, feeling for doors. "Hideo," I whisper, sending it through our link. He doesn't answer. Had everything connecting us shut down when we stepped into this zone? A presence near me makes me reach a hand out. "Hideo?" I murmur. It isn't him. Instead, a steel silhouette emerges from the fog. Zero. Jax. Had he gotten past her? He must have. Had he? The thought jolts through me, too terrible to linger on. He seizes my arm and hurls me. I go flying across the hall and slam hard into the floor on my back. The impact knocks all the wind out of me. My eyes go wide. I gasp like a fish on land. Above me, Zero comes striding out of the mist, his masked face turned down in my direction. I scramble backward on my hands and feet, my teeth clenched, edging next to the wall again and hunting desperately for the doors at the end of the corridor. We're not going to make it. Zero raises an arm and aims down toward me. I try in vain to roll away. As I move, another figure materializes beside me. Hideo. He's in a crouch against the floor, and his green-gridded eyes are turned up to zero, narrowed in rage. His bruised hands are clenched into tight fists. His voice emerges in a growl. Don't touch her. He throws himself at Zero with all his strength. It's enough of a surprise attack to knock Zero backward, and the two of them hurtle to the floor in a crash. Hurry, Amika, Hideo shouts. I hop to my feet and run my hand along the wall. Come on, come on. And then I find it. The shape of the first door, then the second. My fingers halt on the groove of a third sliding door, the panic room. I whirl to look back down the hall. Through the patches of fog emerge Hideo and Zero. Zero has the advantage of brute strength in his metal suit, but Hideo is fast on his feet, nimble where Zero has been slowed down by the injuries Jax has inflicted. Hideo kicks out at Zero's metal chest, sending him back a step. Zero recovers too quickly. He whips a hand out and grabs Hideo's neck, shoving him back against a wall. Then, he raises a fist and hurls it into Hideo's stomach. Hideo lets out a choked cry. I fumble for the panic room's door handle until my fingers finally close around it. Hideo! I scream out as I yank the door open with all my strength. Farther down the hall, more guards are arriving on the scene. Hideo glances in my direction. He clenches his teeth, pulls his legs up to his chest, and kicks at Zero as hard as he can. Once, twice, the third time, Zero's fingers loosen slightly from around Hideo's neck. It's enough for him to slip free. Hideo hits the ground and runs toward me. I reach out, seizing his arm as he approaches me, and pull us inside the panic room. I slide the door shut right as Zero gets to the entrance. The last thing I see before I snap the physical hinge across the door, locking us in, is the sight of Zero's shielded face. Then we're in, the door sealing us behind a thick barrier of steel. I fall backward onto the floor and scramble away from the door. On the other side comes the sound of pounding, Zero or his guards trying to break it down. But we must be behind so many layers that it's hard to hear anything. Inside the room, panels line one wall, showing a series of views of the lab. My breaths come out in wheezing gasps. Hideo utters a soft groan behind me. I turn to see him slumped against the wall, one hand clutching his side. Only now do I notice the dark red staining his shirt. I drop to my knees beside him. Shit, I whisper, touching his arm. He winces as he gingerly moves his hand enough for me to see the wound. Between his trembling, blood-stained fingers is a deep gash, likely made by a blade. Zero hadn't just hit him in the side with his fist. There must have been a sharp weapon embedded on him too, and it had ripped open Hideo's flesh. Here, I whisper, trying to keep my voice from shaking as I shrug off my jacket and loop it around his waist. Through the wound seeps a frightening pool of blood. Hideo lets out another clenched moan as I pull the jacket tight against the gash. His breaths are coming in short gasps, and his face is shock white, beaded with sweat. I crouch with him and clutch his bloody hand, overwhelmed by how helpless I feel. Everything is falling apart. It takes me a second to register what Hideo's whispering. I'm sorry, he says over and over again. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. My dream, his quiet voice, his hands pulling me close. I squeeze his hand tighter and rest my head against his, cringing at his cold, clammy skin, before looking at him again. His eyes meet mine. They are so overwhelmingly dark. I just wanted. I know, I choke out, forcing back the tears in my eyes that threaten to spill over. Concentrate on breathing.
Give me time to get into Zero's mind.
Hideo closes his eyes, his lashes resting against his cheeks. I fumble in my pocket for the lenses that Jax had tossed at me. Finally, I pull one of the boxes out and twist off the caps to stare down at the new lenses that will connect me with Zero. Link with me once you're in, Hideo whispers as my gaze goes up to him again. He gives me a weak but resolute nod. I nod back. One of the lenses trembles against the tip of my finger. If this goes wrong, it's all over. I bring up my hack to hover over my palm again, making sure it's still here and intact in my account. I hesitate a final time. Outside, a clang against the door makes the entire room shudder. Hideo and I exchange a silent stare. Then I remove my old lenses and put in the new ones. A tingle rushes through me. Quickly now, I tell myself, as I instantly bring up the cube. Before the system can wholly connect me with Zero's mind, I open the cube and let it run. It bursts into a sphere around me. The panic room vanishes. I find my virtual self standing in the middle of a black field. It stretches in every direction, a tangible darkness that pushes against the boundaries of my mind, threatening to close in like the deep ocean against a diver. I brace myself against it. Maybe Jax and I had been wrong all along. I'm never going to be able to keep Zero from seizing control. But the sphere around me holds, pushes back. At the same time, a single door materializes before me. I know immediately that it is a door leading into Zero's mind. Zero's mind. It's here. I can step in. A flood of hope rushes through me. I reach out and send a link to Hideo. He doesn't respond right away, and for a moment, I fear the worst. He's already gone. Then he accepts it. A familiar wave of his emotions reaches me, and then he's here, standing beside me in this virtual hellscape. In virtual reality, he doesn't look injured, but his movements are slightly jerky, as if he were cutting in and out in the blink of an eye, his real-life pain affecting his connection to the Neuralink. I know this glitch, Hideo says as he steps closer to the door. One of our engineers had pointed it out early on, and I'd tasked Ken with making sure it was patched properly. He narrows his eyes at the mention of his former friend's name. Then he lied to you, I finish, and Hideo nods grimly. For the sake of money or promises of freedom, Ken had sold the glitch instead to Taylor. Maybe it will all come back to haunt him, Hideo adds, and this will turn out to be the glitch that saves all of us. I put a hand against the door's handle. Let's hope so, I reply. I push it open. We both step back as the door itself disintegrates into nothing, revealing behind it the first glimpse into the world of Zero's mind. Pitch black, like staring into deep space. I step forward first. My feet float over an expanse of nothingness beyond the door. Hideo follows me through a second later. The first change I notice on me in here is that I'm clad from neck to toe in black armor. Hideo is dressed the same. He looks so much like Zero from the neck down, in fact, that I'm unnerved by the sight of him in my peripheral vision. An invite from Hideo appears in my view. Play Warcross? It asks. I accept it. The darkness around us ripples. It blurs silver and gray before a virtual world finally materializes. A twisted place formed from Zero's mind, corrupting the Neuralink's Warcross databases of worlds. Hideo and I find ourselves standing on a stone bridge, staring out at a crumbling city that continues upward and downward forever, surrounding us. Everything is constantly moving. New stairs rise, old stairs break into falling stone. Bridges connecting buildings form and shatter. Towers morph into shape before collapsing. Dark, glittering marbles hover in the air. I feel an instinctive urge to reach for them, like their power-ups, while simultaneously knowing they are landmines that need to be avoided. My armor shifts too, and the equipment I usually have in a Warcross game appears. The familiar pouches and straps hanging from my belt. Shadowy figures move between the shifting buildings. Hideo looks at me. "We can't get through this with just the two of us," he says. "We need a team." A grim smile hovers on the edges of my lips. We have a team. Chapter 29. It's possible that I can't reach Hammy, Asher, and Roshan at all anymore. They've each been linked with me before, but when I bring up my directory, it looks like a blank slate, and my stomach sinks. Maybe they hadn't come out of the arena without being tethered to Zero's mind. Then gradually, it fills in. Lists of names. My connection from inside this panic room is slightly slower from the thick layers of metal surrounding us, but it holds. I find my teammates, each one glowing a faint green, indicating that they're all online. Asher is the first to answer. "Ems," he says, his voice sounding like a whisper. An instant later, he accepts my invite and appears on the bridge beside us, his avatar also clad in the same black armor. Relief floods through me at the sight of him. Even though I know neither of us can feel it, I rush forward and throw my arms around him. He startles at my rapid movement, then laughs once and holds me at arm's length. "Hey, Captain," I greet him. He shakes his head at me. "Always my wild card," he replies with a grin. Soon Hammy connects too, followed by Roshan. In spite of everything, they're all here. I greet each of them in turn, while they exchange tense nods with Hideo. Asher glances down in unease at his armor and takes in the moving, shifting city all around us. "What the hell is this place?" he whispers. "The inside of Zero's mind," I reply. "We have to find Sasuke, so I can give him this." I bring up the files that Jax had given me, the memories and iterations of him from the library. Hammy's eyes meet Hideo's for a moment, warily, before settling on me. "The arena," she says urgently. "Everything just stopped. And when we came to, you guys were gone. Everyone in there looks like they've been possessed by a spirit. I guess that's technically true, isn't it?" Hideo exchanges a look with me. I hadn't even had time to spare a thought for how people outside of the Institute might be reacting to Zero's control. "The entire Tokyo Dome is just a sea of silent people," Roshan adds. His lips are tight with fear, and I wonder if he's thinking of Tremaine, trapped under Zero's control as he idles in his hospital bed. No nurses will be taking care of him if they're just frozen in place. "We fled the arena and made it back to Asha's place, but as we went, we saw subways full of people with blank stares. Roads filled with people standing outside their cars, moving like machines." He shudders at the memory. "We saw an old man in the street who looked like he wasn't affected by the lenses. Maybe someone whose beta lenses didn't get patched, or the odd person who didn't use the Neuralink. Zero must have ordered the others around him to get him. I saw him mobbed by a swarm of people." A chill rushes through me at the image. "Then we don't have much time," I answer. "This hack is the only thing protecting us from Zero's mind, but that doesn't mean he won't have other ways to get past it to us. There aren't going to be any rules to this, and no one's going to call a foul. We only get one shot to play the game of our lives. If Zero manages to catch us, he could seize control of our minds and walk inside them, as surely as we're in his. And with his current power, he could do whatever he wished. Erase parts of it. He could immobilize us, leaving us sitting quietly and staring off into space in the same way he'd done to everyone else. He could keep us like that forever, until we died in the real world. He could swallow us whole if we're not careful. I'm ashamed that even after all this time, I still half expect the writers to step away and opt out of this. After all, this isn't just some normal Warcross game. Why would anyone want to take that chance with me? Who would put themselves in danger alongside me? But Asher just whistles at the shifting city. A glint appears in his eyes, the irresistible draw of a challenge pulling at the competitive part of him. He had stared down at me with that look during the war draft, when he'd chosen me despite the fact that I was completely untested and unranked. "Good," he answers. "I wouldn't dream of sitting this one out." Hammy doesn't even hesitate before she taps her chest twice in the signature Warcross salute. "In," she says. "In," Roshan echoes, his eyes steady on mine. Hideo touches my shoulder, then nods at the landscape around us. "He knows we're in here," he says, studying the changing structures. He gestures at the shifting architecture. "See how he's already trying to block obvious paths with obstacles? He must be shielding himself." Hideo points out a door embedded against one tower's wall, with no stairs leading up to it at all. There are other doors in strange places, underneath stairs, on ceilings, open doors displaying nothing but cement. Doors everywhere. It's dizzying. Which is exactly what Zero wants. But Hideo's hand stops in the direction of one last tower. I can just barely make out a door standing alone on its flat rooftop, the entrance hidden almost entirely by pillars. Dark marbles hover along the edges of the tower, spiraling around it in a silent pattern. A stone staircase runs along the side of the tower, from the very top all the way down to the end of the bridge where we stand. "There," Hideo says to us. "There is a pathway up to that door, even though he's trying to hide it. It might be our way forward."
"How do you know?"
Roshan asks.
"Why would Zero even give us a path to anything in the first place?"
Hideo turns to him. "Because," he replies, "that's not Zero. That's Sasuke calling for us. I can recognize his way of thinking here, designing a way through all of this." I look back up toward the door. Now I see it. This is a landscape of two minds, fighting each other.
"So we go up there?"
Asher says. Already, he's trying to break down how we'd do it.
"So we go up there," Hideo confirms.
A clicking sound behind us makes me turn. In the darkness, materializes a shape that reminds me of Zero. Nothing but black armor from head to toe. A second emerges beside him, followed by a third. There must be a dozen of these security bots coming out of the shadows toward us. They don't seem to know exactly where we are, but they're facing our general direction. As more gather and they start to move faster, I break into a run toward the tower with the stairs.
"Go!"
I yell. We all bolt in unison down the bridge. As the world around us senses our movement, a thunderous crack sounds from above, and I lift my head to see black clouds forming in between the towers that disappear into the heavens. Lightning forks between them. One strikes a building ahead of us. It breaks off a boulder of cement from the side of the structure, sending it tumbling down to our bridge. We skid to a halt as the boulder smashes into the middle of our path, blocking us from the tower and scattering debris everywhere. If Sasuke is the one creating this path for us, then Zero is the one trying to destroy it.
"Stand back,"
I shout as I pull one of the sticks of dynamite from my belt. I sprint to the boulder, light the dynamite, and toss it at its base. Then I dart as far back as I can get. The explosion rocks the bridge, and I'm thrown face down. Stone and dust fly in every direction as the boulder disintegrates into pieces. I squint as I hop back onto my feet and run to rejoin my teammates. As I near them, they emerge out of the cloud of dust to the security bots hot on their trail. Two of the bots are closing in fast. "Move, move!" Roshan shouts at me, waving for me to keep pace with the others as they run along the cleared bridge. He skids to a halt, his legs sweeping a half circle on the ground as he turns to face the oncoming figures. His forearms come up and across. A glowing blue shield bursts out from it. He lunges at the first figure, shoving it back with all his strength. The bot goes flying at the impact from Roshan's shield, tumbling in a crash of metal until it falls from the edge of the bridge and disappears. Roshan brings his arms apart. The single shield reforms into two, one strapped against each of his forearms. He smashes one shield hard into the second running figure. The hit is so strong that the figure actually crumples, its chest caving in as it falls onto its back with a heavy crunch. Roshan's shields vanish as he brings his arms down and whirls to catch up with us. As we near the base of the tower's staircase, it shudders. My gaze sweeps from the top of the tower down to the bottom of the stairs. As I look on, a huge chunk of stone breaks off from the stair base and falls, crumbling into pieces. More cracks cut up along the staircase. We skid to a halt at the broken base. The intact staircase hangs high over our heads, too far up for us to reach. It will be impossible to climb up this way. As we look on, cracks continue to cut along the side of the tower. Hammy breaks into a smile at the sight. Where others might see a disadvantage, she sees footholds. "Can you do it?" Asher says to her. Even as he says it, some of the cracks widen while others narrow and new ones lace across the stone. Hammy doesn't hesitate. "No problem." "I'm going with you," I say, undoing the rope at my belt. I toss her one end of it, and she straps it tight around her waist. Once we reach the staircase, we'll drop the rope down. "What's this? Another showdown between us?" Hammy grins sidelong at me before she launches herself at the tower. Her fingers dig into the first crack on the wall as she pulls herself up. "You know I'll beat you." "I'll let you beat me 10 times over if we can just keep ahead of this breaking wall," I call after her, before following in her wake, the rope dangling between us, and start climbing. Below us, Hideo turns to see the security bots pass where I'd cleared the boulder from our path. They break into a run toward the base of the tower. He turns to face them, pulls out the blade hanging from his side, and twirls it once before them. Asher and Roshan brace themselves too. I look back up to where Hammy is climbing a foot above me. One of the cracks she's gripping suddenly seals back up like a zipper, nearly slicing off her fingers. She lets go just in time and goes tumbling. I yank out one of my knives and stab into the groove I'm using, bracing myself hard against the wall. The rope between us pulls taut. It nearly takes me with her, but my knife holds, and Hammy jerks to a stop several feet below me. Instantly, she scrambles for the wall again and finds her footing. I struggle on. The intact staircase comes into view. I inch my way over, then make a giant leap for it. My upper torso hits the stairs while my lower half dangles over its edge. I grab until my fingers find a solid crack in the stairs, and I haul myself up. Hammy reaches it right after me. Down below, Hideo lunges at the nearest bot to reach them, cutting its metallic body in half with a shower of sparks. Hammy loosens the rope from her waist and tosses it down. She wraps her arms around my waist. "Okay," I shout at them. "Up you go." Roshan goes first, followed by Asher. Hammy and I flatten ourselves against the stairs as each of them comes up, pulling themselves onto the staircase. Hideo comes last. He leaps for the rope and barely manages to avoid one of the bots that grabs for his leg. I reach down and take his arm as he makes his way onto the stairs. We race up the staircase. As we go, the world around us shudders again. Scarlet beacons of light suddenly turn on from the rooftops of the other towers, sweeping across the moving city like prison spotlights. I concentrate on the climb. The steps crack underneath our feet as we go. Hammy arrives at the top first. The door glows blue around its edges, a startling contrast to its grim surroundings. She pushes against the glowing door, but it doesn't budge. "I think we need a key or something," she mutters as she shoves herself against it again. We push along with her, but it doesn't so much as shudder. I look back down at the steps, some of which have crumbled away, and then back at the door. There are two round hovels against either side of it. Hideo steps away from the door first.
"I recognize some of the pieces here."
He nods at the dark marbles hovering in the air, and when I look closer, I notice that they glitter a deep scarlet and sapphire. Immediately, I know what he means. These are from the game that Sasuke had once made up with Hideo, when they'd gone to the park and thrown red and blue colored plastic eggs all across the grass, and then raced to retrieve them. When Sasuke had been stolen away. Remnants of that memory are now scattered in here, distorted into a nightmare. I look back at the door's two hovels. They're the slots where the marbles fit, hearkening back to how Hideo and Sasuke had once played this game.
"We need to collect them," Hideo says. "One red, one blue."
Hammy looks out at the hovering dark marbles. She nods at the closest one, and before anyone can stop her, she crouches against the steps and takes a flying leap off the side, launching into the air in the blink of an eye.
"Wait!"
Hideo starts to shout. She seizes the closest one to her, twists in midair, and shoves it into her pocket. As she falls, she shoots out her rope and snags it on a crack in the stairs. She swings in an arc down further on the tower, dangling to a stop below us.
"Got one,"
she calls up to us. Every single one of the sweeping red lights suddenly shoots toward us, flooding all of us in a scarlet glow. A deafening horn echoes across the landscape. This was a trap. The marbles are needed in order to get through the door, but making contact with those same marbles has also alerted Zero to exactly where we are.
"Climb!"
Asher shouts down at Hammy, right as we see a whirlwind of security bots cluster at the base of the tower. Hammy doesn't waste another breath. She starts pulling herself up the rope as quickly as she can. Roshan darts down the steps two at a time toward her, but the bots are moving so fast that I know they'll catch up to them before Hammy can get back to us. I glance at Hideo and toss him one end of my rope. He catches it. Then I swing down toward Hammy and Roshan. But the bots are swarming up too fast. They'll catch up to them before I can make it. Below me, Roshan has reached Hammy and positioned himself in front of her as she pulls herself up onto the lone island of a step she's on. He narrows his eyes at the approaching bots and crosses his forearms. His shield appears. The bots clash against it. Roshan winces as he's pushed back, his boots digging hard against the stone steps, trying in vain to keep them from pushing him right off the edge. Hammy hops to her feet and lunges back up the stairs toward us. Roshan's shield can't sustain the hits anymore. The glowing blue circle shudders as the bots throw themselves once more at it, and then it flickers out. I scream something. They charge forward at him.
"Hey!"
My head jerks up at the sound of Asher's voice. He's leaped off the stairs to grab onto another marble. Half of the security bots shift direction toward him now, while the others slow for an instant, giving Roshan just enough time to turn and race up the steps after Hammy. I dart past them both as they rejoin Hideo at the top. Roshan glances at me.
"Where are you going?"
he shouts. I don't answer right away. Instead, I stop beside Asher and crouch down, then pull a stick of dynamite from my utility belt. I fit it against the steps, right before the bots. Move!
I shout at Asher. He already sees what I'm doing.
As I turn tail, so does he, and we sprint up right as the dynamite goes off behind us. The explosion knocks us to our knees. Behind us is a gaping hole in the steps, so we walk.